This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch. The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the studio gym where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. I think we have all the audio problems from yesterday squared away. When I came in yesterday, I had no headphones to use because I took the apparatus that we plug all our headphones into Las Vegas and used it at the live remote. And so I actually had a little speaker set up on my desk that I was having to listen to guests talk to me. And it was really quite awkward. And I kept fiddling with the volume. And I know I drove everybody crazy yesterday. It's not going to happen today, I can promise you. Today, we've been long awaiting another installment of the Subversity Science Roundup with the brilliant Adele Moussa. How you doing, Adele?
I'm doing fine, and I'm happy to be back on the air, so to say. We're a couple of weeks, I think 3 weeks without our Subversity Science Roundup, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, that's right. And it's been long awaited. People keep asking me, when are you going to do another Subversity? When are you going to do another Subversity? And in true Subversity Science Roundup form, we're going to address, first of all, something that is in the news that I'm getting emails from friends and from people asking me to weigh in. And by the way, I have to tell you, the Subversity notes this week look like they're ready to go to publish. It looks like a magazine article. It's fantastic. Adele does nothing that isn't impeccably laid out and formatted. It's just amazing. But anyway, people want to know about this new research on statin drugs. So statin drugs in the past have gotten a rap for being drugs that could actually promote dementia. And a lot of people worried about that, and there's lots of evidence that it does. So now we have a study that confuses people and says, well, statin drugs may actually prevent memory loss. And, of course, these are the bylines and the little blurbs that you hear on the mainstream media. But Adele actually delves into the research without an agenda to find out if it's true or not. So what did you find out when you looked at this? First of all, what statin drug did they use in this particular research study?
One problem about this particular study, which has been in the news as of late, is that the actual paper is not yet released. The only information source I have is the official press release from the scientists. And I can't really tell whether my inference is correct, but I assume that this was rather a patient does take statins or patient does not take statins assessment. And in their particular analysis, they concluded that it is quite obvious, based on their empirical data, that being on a statin drug actually protects you from dementia, or at least slows down the progress of dementia. And initially, I remembered that we had discussed problems, not just muscular side effects, but also negative side effects on the brain in the past. And so I started out digging up other research. And funnily, I did not even have to open one of those typical medical databases, but could just click on the link right below the article, which says that another statin drug had just been found to, or had just been linked to, memory impairment. So this does already tell you that the whole issue is somehow in the open. And when I kept digging, I realized that it appears this is most of the epidemiological studies, where you do just check whether a patient takes a statin drug or he doesn't take a statin drug, actually say that those who take statin drugs are better protected against dementia on general cognitive decline than those who don't. If you look at the rodent studies, on the other hand, and other, or the few relatively controlled human studies, it appears as if there were also mechanisms which could link the consumption of statin drugs with an increased risk of dementia and Alzheimer's disease.
Okay, so, and obviously this is something that is continually confounding to me, and that is, you know, the medical community wants us to believe in the science, but the science contradicts itself. And then the medical community wants us to believe in the science that they favor, saying that the science that they don't favor is either not well done or something was missing. And this is why you must use critical thinking skills, because if you're looking to the science to lead you down the path of great health and longevity, you will be maligned by the information. And so in this particular instance here, I know that there's a discussion about plaque buildup in the brain and the linkage to cholesterol, but I have been a long opponent of this in the area of atherosclerosis, that plaque is not the cause. While it may be part of the equation, it's not necessarily the one thing that is causing it. Is there any indication that this plaque buildup in the brain that leads to things like Alzheimer's disease, for instance, is actually controlled better when you use statin drugs?
Yeah, there is. First of all, there is sort of a direct connection to high cholesterol levels that has been observed in previous studies. So there are people with higher cholesterol levels appear at higher risk for Alzheimer's disease. But there is no real mechanistic connection here. And if you look at the molecular mechanisms that take place in the brain when the plaque builds up, it's rather that the cholesterol is facilitative. So it's, in a way, it's necessary to produce the plaque. So one of the effects, or the beneficial effects, so to say, the cholesterol-lowering medications may have could actually be that they just take away the substrate for the construction of the plaque. What is directly related to what you said before is that we are currently not just in the area of the effect of statins on the brain, but also in many other aspects related to the effect of statins, we are seeing that they seem to have a certain anti-inflammatory effect. So it may be that they also reduce the need, so to say, for plaque buildup, if you follow your logic,
right,
that is a means to handle the inflammation. And then there are alternative mechanisms, one of which is directly related to another side effect, so to say, of statins, which appear to interact with the receptor for advanced glycation end products. I know that you had my friend Sean Casey on the show back in the day talking about RAGE, or AGEs, as they are also
right,
called. And the corresponding receptor appears to, well, you could say it's falling apart, so to say, when you take a statin drug. And this means that the negative effects that are produced by these dietary compounds that arise when you heat foods or overheat foods and they get burned, for example, those negative effects won't hurt you. So if this is part of the effect, you could also say that the differences in the various studies could result from a normal or a AGE-rich diet, which means that somebody would consume a diet that is high in those advanced glycation end products would benefit more from taking a statin than somebody who already leads a quote-unquote healthy lifestyle and tries to avoid the products with high amounts of advanced glycation end products in them.
Interesting. And this is part of the problem right now that we're having. People want to do things that are well known to harm the body, but then they want to take drugs to mitigate that so they can enjoy themselves and live the life of not caring. I see you have something in here about the APOE4 mutation and dementia.
Yeah.
I didn't know that people who have the APOE4 mutation have a higher rate of dementia. Is this a result of epigenetics more so than genetics? In other words, do they have when they eat certain foods or they do certain things lifestyle-wise that they just are easier converted to plaque in the brain?
Well, it's a connection of both. On the one hand, the APO4 gene is hereditary. So if the people in your family have it, and you have a family history of people who had high cholesterol and really high cholesterol levels, then it could be that you have this certain gene. And it is initially we discovered it in the context of cholesterol metabolism, but we're now realizing that it influences much more than just the metabolism of cholesterol. And it does not really mean that the high cholesterol levels you may have due to this gene variant lead to a higher risk of dementia, because there's also some evidence that you are more susceptible to diabetes if you have this gene type. And the 70% increase you just mentioned is was observed in a study in Canada. And there are also other studies which also analyze for specific types of the E4 gene. You can, for example, have one quote-unquote normal variant, which is not E4, for example, E2 or so, and one E4 paired. And this is not as bad as it would be if you had both E4 varieties. And I think that this is really a very interesting area of research, which is certainly becoming more important on the research level, because you really have to know the EPO-E4 type of your patients or of your subjects, because, for example, fish oil will have the exact opposite effect
right.
in people with gene type. So if you, for example, have a study in which 50% of your population is E4 and the other 50% is not, the results of a trial using fish oil, for example, to ameliorate the effects or to slow down a dementia would be null result, because it could help all others, but it could be detrimental for those with the E4 type. And on a personal level, I think it's becoming not just this gene, but also other genes are becoming more and more important, because we see that there is no optimal diet for everyone, but rather that those genes really make fundamental differences. I just posted yesterday a study which is a reanalysis of a European weight loss trial in which the scientists found that when they analyzed the ability of the people who lost weight to set this weight off, to keep their weight, for most of them it was beneficial to follow a high-protein diet. But there was a certain gene type which were, I think, 13% or at least 70% had a normal gene type, and around 12% or so were in this particular category, for whom this was not beneficial. They actually gained more weight on the gained more weight back on the high-protein diet. So many things we know today, or we believe to know today, could be very different on an individual level.
Interesting. We have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to pick it up on this as well, because I want to find out where Adele stands on whether or not it's something universally that we should accept, that using statin drugs can actually prevent dementia. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. This is the Subversity Science Roundup. It's brought to you by Subversity.com, the single best blog to read anywhere you are. If you're interested in living longer, feeling better, better sex life, all those things are covered at Subversity.com, SUPPVERSITY.com. Go there today. Be smarter tomorrow. We'll be right back.
He's keeping tabs on government health agencies.
It's called the Environmental Protection Agency.
Carl Lenore.
Where is the protection? Where is the protection?
Superhuman Radio.
If you're taking more than one nutritional supplement, stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food you can buy. Even Olympic athletes have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com. You take just one nutritional supplement to help the brain with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity. It is safe with no contraindications. Learn more at BioAge.com or call 877-288-9116. Mention Superhuman Radio and get a 10% discount. You can also go to SuperhumanRadio.com and click the BioAge WH banner ad. Enter promo code SHR for a discount.
Just like Carl Lenore, jumpstart your day with a liquid shot of high-dose vitamin C. Everyone is searching for that magic formula to look better and feel better. We don't claim to have a magic formula, but we do know that more than 1 million people take a shot of our high-dose vitamin C supplement every day. They're rewarding their body with an important nutrient and antioxidant that is sugar-free, gluten-free, and dairy-free. All of these benefits and no side effects. Unlike pills and powders, this high-tech bullet delivers vitamin C directly into your cells. Try Live-On Labs Vitamin C with a 100% money-back guarantee. Save $10 when you order now. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com or call 1-866-790-2107. That's 1-866-790-2107. And mention code SHRC to save $10 off each carton. Carl sees the benefits. So will you.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead. Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise With Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Sega.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. So I did an interview for Tony Federico of Paleo Magazine Radio, and it's now posted on their website, and you can go to my Facebook page and check it out. It's titled Bringing the Message of Health to the Masses with Superhuman Radio host Carl Lenore. So for once, I get interviewed. How about that? We're talking with Adele Musa, and we're still talking about whether or not statin drugs should be used to prevent dementia. Obviously, there's other mechanisms at work here, right, Adele?
Yeah, one of them, I already mentioned one of them, which is the one that is that could be related to the advanced glycation end products. Then it appears that aside from taking away the substrate, which is necessary for the formation of the plaque, meaning cholesterol, there appears to be a direct inhibitory effect on the biochemical reactions that take place when the precursor of the plaque is actually becoming the form of protein that will then really attach to the brain, so to say. And there is recent science from 2013 that suggests that in this process the presence of statin drugs directly interferes. And there is another interesting connection here, because this is not a really well researched area as of now. But people may have heard in a different context, namely with respect to muscular problems that are related to statin consumption, that there are water and lipid-soluble statins. Mm-hmm. And it appears as if the lipid-soluble statins, which will obviously have an easier time actually reaching those areas of the brain where this process takes place, appear to have a better protective or a more protective effect against against dementia. At least this was the result of a relatively recent study that compared the length of which of statin consumption or being on a statin, and the outcome or the number of patients who developed dementia. And by the way, the result was again positive, but only for the lipid-soluble statins and not for the water-soluble. And maybe some names, among the lipid-soluble ones, the most prominent are certainly simvastatin and atorvastatin. And these are the particular statins in this study, I cited before, where longer consumption was associated with a decreased risk in dementia.
On the other hand.
Go ahead. Because I was just
whenever we talk about the brain, right, I have a hard time understanding or believing or trusting that something that we are taking orally that's being delivered systemically has the kind of effect on the brain that we understand. And here's what I mean by that. We know that the brain is a closed system, if you will, and it's very cautious on what it lets in and what it doesn't let in. We know, as we do more and more research, that things that we thought were true or not. For instance, the brain can produce on demand certain hormones like estradiol, on demand certain peptides like insulin, so that it does not depend on what's going on in the rest of the body for these things that are critical for its function, repair and maintenance. So now we look at statin drugs, and we know that when we take statin drugs, they affect cholesterol in the body. And I keep coming back to this. We're going to discover in a year or two or 5 years from now that the statin drugs don't affect the brain the way we think they do. That the cholesterol lowering that's seen in blood is not necessarily affecting directly or intrinsically what's going on in the brain, but somehow extrinsically. I can't help but believe this because of what we've learned about how the brain is so good at creating its own little environment, and everything that it needs is there. So if something goes wrong downstream in the body, it can still protect itself.
It's possible, and you will be laughing, but one alternative theory is that statins actually restore the blood-brain barrier and thus protect it against assaults from outside, so to say. Thus a protective effect against dementia. So this could be a possibility. And as I said, we don't really know what actually happens in there. And as I said in the introduction, when you look at the molecular effects, you could also enumerate a couple of them that would say, or that would actually rather have you expect negative side effects. And if you look at one of the most recent reviews on this topic, the authors conclude that the epidemiological results actually stand in stark contrast to those of placebo-controlled randomized clinical trials, where most of them had no or slightly negative results. So this really makes you question whether there are other interactions. And I've been talking about the negative effects of the ApoE4 gene type before. And if you think about it, it could, for example, be that for this particular population, which really depend on statins, so to say, to get their cholesterol levels in the normal range almost, but they almost depend on it, those are obviously much more likelier to be in an epidemiological group you analyze, or in a group of people you analyze, because their cholesterol levels are on a normal diet so high that every doctor will prescribe a statin.
Right.
So those are the ones, or the only ones, who benefit. We would be fooled because we do not really know how many of them are in those studies that suggest that taking statin drugs is good for your brain.
Ah.
And even if you leave that aside and just check out what the latest Cochrane review, and many people probably don't know the name Cochrane, was scientists who found a... raise the funds, so to say, and they publish papers, and they have very rigid standardization criteria for their reviews. So they are sort of the gold standard, considered at least by some of the scientists, in terms of reviews of of the literature. And the latest one on a possible recommendation of statins for the use of the treatment of dementia actually says that there is no sufficient evidence out there that statins would in any way protect against dementia. So they also say that the issue is still much in the open, and what we know now is not safe enough to really tell somebody take a statin drug to avoid becoming to avoid developing dementia in your older ages.
Well, and I, you know, this is when critical thinking kicks in. It just doesn't feel right to me to, you know, we have to remember where this is coming from, right? Statin drugs are out there, and they're always trying to repurpose these drugs, always trying to find different applications for these drugs because then they can profit more. And, you know, I had that learned scholar who has spent his entire life researching arteriosclerosis and heart disease, along with the young lady who is one of his peers on the show a while back talking about arteriosclerosis. And, you know, he tried to convince me that cholesterol causes arteriosclerosis by saying that you can't have plaque without cholesterol. But I turned around and I said, but there's plenty of people who have high cholesterol that don't develop plaque. And he that was true. He acknowledged that. But then he went right back and said, yeah, but you can't have plaque without. So it's almost like saying, well, you know, cancer depends on oxygen. So the way to get rid of cancer is to just choke people out. Because you can't grow cancer without oxygen. Well, you know what? You're right, but that's not the way to go at it. It doesn't mean that that's just, but the problem is that is the only arrow in the pharmaceutical agenda's quiver is a statin drug. So they're just trying to find different ways to apply it. So you have to use critical thinking skills here. People develop dementia, whether they are, candidates for dementia or not. Genetically, because of the things that they do in their lives, the food that they put in their mouth, the things that they're exposed to, their improper lifestyle, not lack of sleep, all these things, this is what is at the root of it. Inflammation has been linked to dementia. Why not control inflammation different ways? Why do we have to go for a statin drug whose also byproduct is to reduce inflammation? These, in my humble opinion, no one should be given a statin drug to control dementia. Even if you are somebody who has high cholesterol, there has to be other ways to go at it. Has to be other ways to go at it. That's just my opinion. I'm not a doctor. I have no accreditation. Obviously, no one has to take my advice, but that's what I would apply for myself.
Yeah, and what comes to mind in this context is that scientists are still trying to develop drugs that act on the so-called brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which is an agent that protects your brain and that actually helps the neurons to regenerate. And one of the best ways to really improve this is just to exercise. And we have plenty of evidence for all sorts of physical activity that it, first of all, prevents dementia, and even if you are already having cognitive problems, it will at least it will stall, and then sometimes when this just in the beginning stages can even reverse early symptoms of cognitive decline. And this is particularly true, or at least we do have most evidence for the classic cardio training, so to say. But there is more and more studies coming out that support what you would actually call a bodybuilding or physical culture oriented training, which combines resistance training and cardiovascular training, because the resistance training component will have a major impact on the occurrence of frailty in older people. And this is also, of course, one of the major concerns, or one of the things people should be concerned, but most of them don't really think about it, whether you will be able to rise from your chair when you're old, or whether you are just too weak to do this.
Right. Very, very good point. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to change it up slightly. We're going to start talking about type 2 diabetes, obviously, which plays a role in all of this discussion as well. We're talking with Adel Moussa. This is the Subversity Science Roundup brought to you by Subversity. If you've never been to the Subversity website, you're missing out on an opportunity. It's like shining a bright light on your brain. It's a wonderful experience. You should do it every single day. Adele puts out more information by himself than most magazines do with staff of 20. And he has no agenda, as you can see, by the discussion of statin drugs and dementia. It's not like he's an anti-statin drug guy. I love when he says, on the other hand, it's because he is fair and balanced, and he's not trying to defend a position. He's just like the rest of us. We just want to know the truth, and Adele can help you find it. Go to Subversity, SUPPVERSITY.com. But in the meantime, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
There's something comforting about knowing he's out there.
Government is in place because it assumes that people are too stupid to care for themselves.
By your side.
Government has to take up the parental role of teaching people what to do.
Fighting the good fight.
Government has to get out of people's pantries, first of all. They can't legislate health.
He's Carl Lenore on Superhuman Radio.
You already know that Whey Natural USA is the best whey protein powder from Amish grass pasture fed cows right here in the United States. Well, it's their second anniversary bonanza sale. Now you can get any number of 5-pound jugs of vanilla, chocolate, strawberry, or plain and save 20% when you use the coupon code ANNIV20. There's never anything artificial in Whey Natural USA. Sweetened with stevia and real cocoa, strawberry, or vanilla bean. It's the best, period. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Whey Natural USA banner ad today. New from Rob Regish. Purchase the Blueprint 3.0 today and lock in your free 3-month subscription to the Blueprint Bulletin. Find out what many in the BP Army already know. This is the best investment they've ever made. Includes the free Superhuman University. Add 1 inch to your upper arms course and 3 months of Blueprint Bulletin secrets to up your game. Click the Blueprint banner ad today or go to bodybuildingsupplements.com and purchase your ticket to Gainesville in the fast lane.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Summer's almost here. Are you ready to put on your bathing suit and hit the beach? Age Force can help. Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch for 1 month absolutely free. The Advanced 7 Keto and T2 formula with sustained time-release delivery make this the most potent and effective fat loss supplement, period. Try it for 30 days absolutely free and see for yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today. What do you have to lose other than body fat? Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch today. Absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad now. Are you still putting toxic toothpastes in your mouth? Still brushing with sodium lauryl sulfate, which is related to canker sores and gum recession? You've heard a lot of people in the Superhuman Nation talk about how much they love Aura MD. Carl and Elisa won't brush with anything else. Now get a free bottle of Aura MD and see what all the excitement's about. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Aura MD banner ad today. You cover shipping and we'll give you a free bottle for first-time customers only. What are you waiting for? The best toothpaste alternative is just a click away.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936, wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
What's happening?
What's happening?
Hey! Hey! Now, ladies and gentlemen!
If you're one of the 9 people in my audience that hasn't tried Aura MD yet, you get a free bottle. What are you waiting for? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad. Pay the shipping. It's like peanuts, the shipping, by the way. It's a very small bottle. And try it for yourself. Find out what everybody in the Superhuman Nation is raving over. This stuff is fantastic. I promise you that your significant other will want to kiss you more often if you use Aura MD. It's working for me. Type 2 diabetes, or what I like to call acquired diabetes, and I know that a lot of people feel that I'm unfair when I say, hey, look, you gave this to yourself, schmuck, you know, do something about it. That plays a role in the whole dementia model as well, right?
Certainly, because it, so you could say it sets the scene. And one of the first symptoms of dementia is actually a reduced metabolism in certain areas of the brain, which are no longer really able to be supplied with glucose. And it is quite interesting that this is one of the main reasons, actually, why ketogenic diets are so good for people who already are already developing dementia, because other than the glucose, which cannot really be taken up by the brain when you are already insulin resistant, the ketones can. And simply supplying the brain again with energy will solve many of the problems. And this is an interesting area of research, and there are more and more studies coming out that support this hypothesis that once you've developed, so to say, diabetes of the brain, a ketogenic diet and following a very low-carbohydrate diet style will really help you, because your brain can finally get the energy it needs to operate again.
I did an interview with, well, I've done lots of interviews within this area of discussion, but I did one in particular with a physician, and I can't remember what it was because I'm not taking my statin drugs right now. And I remember suggesting to him that that insulin resistance or inappropriate glucose metabolism in the brain was tantamount to the brain to what running a car engine without oil is to a car engine, that increased friction, if you will. The brain struggling to make do with smaller and smaller amounts of fuel actually cause an inflammation. And he said, we are actually discovering that in a research paper that won't be out for another couple years. But he said, I can't believe you're right on the money about this. And so I strongly feel that, like so many diseases today, they find their origins in metabolic derangement, as does. And so this is yet another reason why, like, turning to the statin drug to try to mitigate the damages of dementia is inappropriate, when you can go right to the root cause and deal with that and not disrupt a bunch of other systems unnecessarily like statin drugs do. So it's really a good discussion.
It's also worth mentioning that diabetes actually leads to, to what people call the metabolic syndrome. So you develop hypertension, you develop obesity, and associated with obesity, you increase the inflammatory load in your body. And you do, of course, develop high cholesterol levels in response or as a consequence of the overall derangement of your metabolism. So it appears as if there were many entrance points to what will finally lead to dementia and to Alzheimer's. But I suppose that one of the most commonest today is diabetes. And, of course, the lack of exercise, so to say. But this is actually only a confounding factor for most people to develop maybe not full-blown diabetes, but at least severe insulin resistance. And what is quite interesting is that one of the emerging treatments for Alzheimer's disease is actually an intranasal spray, an insulin spray.
Yeah.
So because insulin is not just involved in the uptake of glucose and will energize the brain, so to say, but it is also involved in the deconstruction of the plaque. And it helps, for one, to prevent the buildup, and on the other hand, it helps energize the brain. And there are a couple of promising studies, but in the end, this is again just a crutch, because just providing more insulin is not going to cut it.
No.
You really have to reverse the insulin resistance
in the brain, exactly. And you know, and we're going to talk about that next, because this is obviously so we posed problems and we need to pose suggestions and solutions as well. But a listener of the show, and I apologize for I hadn't planned on talking about this, but I will find your name before the show is over and I'll credit you with this. Sent me a beautiful email about a YouTube done by a doctor. I think his name was Dr. Peter Attia, and When I watched this, I scratched my head and I thought, where has this guy been? Has he been living under a rock? Is this an old video? But apparently it's new. And he's a surgeon who realized that maybe obesity doesn't cause insulin resistance, but it's quite the opposite. And I'm thinking, okay, we've known this for a long time. And went on and on about, you know, how he and his team are going to discover the answers and the solutions to insulin resistance. And when I was listening to this video, and I'm just kind of summarizing because it was pretty long, and I was thinking to myself, is it possible that there are still physicians in the mainstream that don't understand that insulin resistance causes not only obesity, but all of these other disorders that they're treating with these myriads of little fragmented drugs here and there? And I thought to myself, if that's true, that's shocking, because that means that there's people out there going to doctors who are never going to be given an opportunity to cure themselves. And they can be cured. I mean, it's shocking to me. Okay, so let's talk about insulin sensitivity for a second. Obviously, if someone can regain insulin sensitivity, then technically they've cured their type 2 diabetes. So how do we do this?
Well, the first thing, and I've written about that in a series in the past couple of weeks, actually, and I think the first part of the series is actually the most important one, because you cannot really rely on your doctor, because what has to be done first, before what is more important than any prescription, is actually that you have to fix what caused the insulin resistance in the first place, and those are lifestyle factors. And things you really have to change is, first of all, you've got to get active. You've got to start working out. And if you are already insulin resistant, and this may be tough to hear for most people, you have to work twice as much as somebody who is just trying to keep his existing insulin sensitivity. And the key factors here are actually that you combine both strength training and aerobic exercises. So you do both of them. And that you also exercise frequently, not for hours, but try to incorporate exercises in your everyday life. And this is very important, not just for the first factor, but also for the second one, that you really have to watch your intake of simple sugars and to control your carbohydrate intake. That doesn't mean that everybody has necessarily to cut down to 50 grams of carbohydrates, which is where most experts say that you can start to get into ketosis. But I think that that especially for someone who is insulin resistant, a good number to start is, depending on the degree of insulin resistance and your activity level, somewhere in between 100 and 150 grams. And now for some listeners, this may sound pretty much, but if you look at the average carbohydrate intake, and if you really sum up all the carbohydrates those people eat, most of the people who suffer from insulin resistance eat much more, thrice or four times that much at least. And this is going to be difficult and can only be done if you also change the foods you eat. If you switch over to a different portion size as far as the things you have on your table are concerned, so there's no longer, or the rice and the pasta is no longer to be the major part of your meal, but this is going to be the vegetables, and you have to have some protein with every meal. Those are actually changes which are not like a diet, or which most people think of a diet like a intermediate intervention, but this is something you really have to stick to, because if you fall off the bandwagon afterwards, you just get back into the same situation you were before. And other things people often overlook are things like alcohol or smoking.
Well, wait. I don't want to move past this first, because I want to talk about something. I want to expand on something with you. So Ron Pena and I were having a discussion at the Olympia, and we were talking about ketosis. And we were talking about how some people can cut their carbs back to even 20 grams a day and have a difficult time getting their blood ketone levels up to where they really need to be for the sweet spot of ketosis, which I forget what it is. It's like above 1 or 3 or something like that. And
are you talking blood ketone levels or urine?
Blood ketone levels, blood yeah. ketone. And so we were talking, and I said, you know, I have to believe that it's not enough to just get your carbohydrate intake down and magically switch into a state of ketosis. I think, I just have a suspicion that insulin plays a role in this as well. And what I mean by that is something that I've been talking about for a long time that the medical orthodoxy needs to get on board with. And that is looking at blood sugar levels without looking at insulin levels is meaningless. It's like looking, it's like saying a car is going 60 miles an hour. Two cars are going 60 miles an hour. One guy has his foot all the way down on the dash, the board, pedal all the way to the metal. The other guy is just barely touching the gas pedal. These cars are running at very, very different rates of efficiency. So looking at blood sugar levels, carbohydrate consumption influencing that, and assuming that ketone levels should reciprocate once blood sugar levels get down, in my humble opinion, is not going to function for everybody unless we look at how much insulin they're pumping out. And I have a strong feeling that in the upcoming year or so, because more and more people are becoming interested in ketone diets for dementia, for cancer, for seizures, and all these other reasons, we're going to find out that the reason that some people have a hard time getting into ketosis is because they have been so metabolically inflexible for so long that they're still producing a lot of insulin to get their blood sugar levels down, even when they are carbohydrate restricted. This is just my suspicion. Would you weigh in on this? Am I off base, do you think, really, on this?
I don't know, because it's unlikely that somebody keeps producing insulin if he does not eat carbohydrates or protein. But protein is actually the problem here, because people interpret a ketogenic diet as a diet that is both high in protein and both high in fat, and that's the case. If you want to get into full ketosis, you have to reduce your protein intake to what to a bodybuilder's nightmare, so to say, because especially if you keep consuming fast proteins like whey protein, they will kick you out of ketosis in no time. This is an absolutely no-go if you want to get into the therapeutic fume of ketosis to be supplementing with tons of protein on top of that. You really have to rely on fat, and it's quite interesting that many of the people claim or say of themselves that they were advocates of a low-carbohydrate diet start to run when you put a fatty piece of steak in front of them, or they cut off the fat from the side and eat just the rest of the protein.
Right.
Because people have been so bamboozled with the fat is bad for you over years that they just can't wrap their head around that. They just added another scapegoat to it, and this is carbohydrates. And there's really nothing as detrimental as a protein-only diet for your energy levels and probably also for your health in the long term. And it is totally opposed to what those people are actually aiming for, because if you want to get into ketosis, you can't eat protein all the time because your liver will just produce glucose from it, and especially the faster proteins will induce a major release of insulin. So this is pretty much pointless, and I think this is mistake number, or the most important mistake people actually make in the fitness community. They eat way too much protein and try to get into ketosis. I don't think that ketosis is actually necessary to benefit, but you will have to accept that when you are consuming your 2 grams of protein per kilogram of body mass, you're not going to go into ketosis. Full stop.
Well, and it needs to be said, and we're going to take a break and come back and list the rest of the things that you could do to get yourself in an insulin-sensitive state, which will make you more metabolically flexible. But it needs to be said that those of you out there who are afraid of a ketogenic diet, because you feel like you're going to lose muscle, all the evidence shows that these diets are muscle-sparing, and I have a suspicion the reason is because the enzymes and processes that are designed to break down proteins and convert them to other things in the lack of adequate protein intake, they shut down. And guess what? They act on muscle as well. So if you have less, if you're processing less protein through the gut, the body also turns less often to protein in the body for sources of fuel. Do you think that that's the reason why they seem to be muscle sparing, Adele?
I think that's part of the reason. And also, you have a readily available energy source and give your body, at least when you're not dieting at the same time, and even if you are, you don't give your body a reason to actually catabolize protein. And the idea that not eating enough protein is the major contributor to muscle loss is totally flawed. The major contributor to muscle loss is sitting around and not working out your muscles and eating too little energy at all. And you can just ameliorate the protein loss if you eat more protein in your diet. You can remain in a beneficial net protein balance. But as you said, when you consume less protein, your body is not going to make or to use the protein unwisely to produce energy from it, but it's rather putting all of this into the protein cycle, so to say, to maintain its muscle stores, unless it obviously sees a reason, because you're really starving, to catabolize not just the protein you eat, but also the one that's part of your body.
Right. All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to pick it up. We're going to give you more information about how you can make yourself more insulin sensitive, which is really a key to avoiding probably 90% of the diseases out there that plague our nation and nations abroad today. You're listening to the Subversity Science Roundup with Adel Moussa. We'll be right back.
He's your personal watchdog.
Is anyone awake up at Capitol Hill?
Sniffing out the corruption in our healthcare policies.
You are literally selling the population of this wonderful country to a death sentence.
He's Carl Lenore.
What's wrong with you people?
On the Superhuman Radio Network.
At Superior Hardcore Peptides, we pride ourselves on accurately dosed, high-quality peptides and research chemicals made in the USA. With all the options out there, we dedicated ourselves to providing the best service and the best products for your research. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com today and use the discount code SHR and get 20% off our already competitive prices. If you're going to do research, do it with the best Superior Hardcore Peptides.
If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre-, intra-, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today. Extreme Formulations is the only company with a dairy protein product with a disclosed 50% whey to 50% micellar casein ratio. It's Ultra Peptide 2.0. It comes in 9 amazing flavors, including the newest lemon pie and butterscotch. Get free shipping on any order size inside the USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Ultra Peptide 2.0 banner ad now. Canadian listeners can also get free shipping on 2 or more jugs of Ultra Peptide 2.0. Don't wait too long because this special won't last. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad today.
Are you still putting toxic toothpastes in your mouth? Still brushing with sodium lauryl sulfate, which is related to canker sores and gum recession? You've heard a lot of people in the Superhuman Nation talk about how much they love Aura MD. Carl and Elisa won't brush with anything else. Now get a free bottle of Aura MD and see what all the excitement's about. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Aura MD banner ad today. You cover shipping and we'll give you a free bottle for first-time customers only. What are you waiting for? The best toothpaste alternative is just a click away.
Iron Mag Labs is the leading supplement company offering the most hardcore pro-anabolic supplements. Visit IronMagLabs.com and check out our top-selling products. Asta RX, Halo Extreme, Sinustain RX, E-Control RX, Decadrol Max, Ultramale RX. Iron Mag Labs makes supplements that actually work. No hype, no BS, just real results. There's a reason you keep hearing about Iron Mag Labs. Come see what you're missing. Visit Iron Mag Labs at IronMagLabs.com for the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Friday night is moving. Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. So right now the discussion is how to regain, maintain, and increase insulin sensitivity. We talked about exercise. We talked about cutting back carbohydrates, especially sugars. You started to allude to the limit your alcohol intake. Let's talk about this for a second, because I think a lot of people think that alcohol is this innocuous product that has very little. In fact, there are articles out in the mainstream that suggest that some alcohol is better than none in increasing or reducing the risk of diabetes.
Yeah, it is. And actually, if you look at the research, the margin is very narrow. And I still believe that there is a confounding factor involved here if you consider who is actually, or who the people are who are consuming half a glass of wine or one glass of wine per week or so, who are benefiting. Those are people who will probably have all sorts of other beneficial, or will probably do all sorts of other beneficial things in their life. And I'm not quite sure whether this can all be incorporated in the corresponding research. And if you look closely, you will see that even if you go across this, or if you consume more than this one glass of wine, this already starts to increase your risk of alcoholic fatty liver disease. And I have actually written a couple of days or about a week ago about the close connection of the liver and the clogging up of the liver with fat and diabetes, which has long been assumed to be a consequence of being diabetic. But actually, in the first stages of insulin resistance, it is the liver which is taking a hit and becomes insulin resistant, so to say. And this is particularly problematic because insulin shuts out the glucose production in the liver. And when the liver does not sense that there is insulin around, it will keep producing glucose, although there is already enough glucose in the blood. And this is a vicious circle which is actually opening the door for the development of full-blown diabetes, so to say. So alcohol is a no-go, and cigarettes, of course, as well. They've been related to increased diabetes risk in countless of studies. But I know that it's difficult to let go of these drugs because, I mean, they are drugs, and everybody knows that you can be addicted to them, just as you can, in a way, be addicted to your regular food. And I'm not quite sure if this is a physical addiction, like to real drugs, but I know that it's difficult to let go of your favorite food you've been eating for years.
Right.
And that would go back to the previous point that you have to control your carbohydrate intake. Part of this actually, that the problem actually is that you want to keep your certain food items in your diet, although you know that they don't match with your new goals. And this is really problematic, I think.
Okay, so you also say avoid medications, but which medications negatively affect insulin sensitivity?
Actually, you should rather ask which don't do that, because every medication that is passing through the liver and has some effect on the cytochrome cascade will potentially modify or impair your liver function, and this could have downstream consequences, even if they are only very small, on your insulin sensitivity.
Okay, the next one, which I am a huge believer of, and that's sleep, getting proper sleep. In fact, interestingly enough, so I've been talking so much about the blue blocker glasses, put them on at 7:30 at night. That way when you work on your computer or your iPad, whatever, you're blocking the blue light that inhibits melatonin production. And so my director and producer of the TV show, Dan Foos, yesterday we talked about the blue blocker glasses. I showed people where to get them at Amazon. There's a pair of Uvex blue blocker glasses that are utility glasses that fit over your existing eyewear. They're completely adjustable temples. The lenses rotate up and down. They're just cool. And so I gave him a pair after the show yesterday, and I said, now, Dan, because he's notorious for working late at night on his computer, tonight I want you to put these on at sundown and wear them. And so he came in this morning. He was unusually chipper, unusually upbeat. He was joking around, which he generally doesn't do. And I said to him, did you wear the blue blockers last night? He goes, yes. He goes, I have this beautiful 60-inch LED television, and I put them on,
And I was watching TV, and I thought, oh, Carl's crazy if I'm going to wear these. They've changed the color of the TV. He says, after about 10 minutes, I didn't notice the change in the color. He says, I went to bed like I normally did. I did not wake up in the middle of the night like I normally do, and I have been doing for years now. I slept fantastic. He says, do you think it's the glasses? I says, I don't know. Try it again tonight and find out. But this is getting proper sleep, however you have to do it, whatever techniques you have to use, is the core of improving insulin sensitivity next to probably fasting. What do you think about that?
True. I think it's even more important than fasting. And actually, it implies fasting. Because if you have a proper sleep hygiene, you're fasting in the time you're sleeping.
Yes.
And proper sleep hygiene actually includes, for most people, 7 hours of sleep. I often get this question, how much sleep do I need? And this is really, there are interpersonal differences of how much sleep you need. But the most important thing is actually not how long you sleep, but the quality of the sleep and that you stick to the same rhythm. If you look at the epidemiological data that's out there, then it's not so much not sleeping long enough, but rather not having a fixed rhythm that is associated with all sorts, not just diabetes, but also cancer, all sorts of diseases. And those who work on constantly varying shifts are actually the ones who are suffering most from these problems. So you really have to develop those little rituals. And it's quite funny, but if you do certain things every evening 20 minutes before you go to bed, there appears to be a, well, like the Pavlovian reflex, when you train a dog that he always gets his food once you ring a bell. That, for example, every evening you're, I don't know what you're doing. Maybe you're packing away your books or whatever you've been working on. Then this triggers the routine, and this will help you go to sleep in time. And at least for your working days where you know that you have to get up at a certain time the next day, having this routine established is a major benefit. And you also obviously have to try to minimize the consumption of stimulants, because I think in these days, many people actually believe the coffee would help them to make it through the day. But in the end, there is a certain stage when all the stimulants, caffeine and others as well, they don't really work anymore, but they will still affect your brain. I know many people who say, well, I can drink a cup of coffee and go to bed 10 minutes later. And actually, I'm one of them. But there are studies that show that those people who are sleeping then, that their brain waves are still different from how they would be if they had not drunk the coffee. So just being able to sleep doesn't mean that you get the restorative sleep. And de-stressing is very important. So also shorter timeouts during the day. They are part of your overall health program, so to say, and they will also help you to prevent becoming insulin resistant.
Okay, and the last one on the list, and then we're going to take a break and come back and talk about supplements that will help you. The last one on the list, you do include fasting. So what is the last item on your list for improving insulin sensitivity?
Well, the last one is actually, it includes fasting, but the idea is rather to give your body some time where you don't overwhelm it with nutrients. And when you look at the molecular mechanisms, most people will be familiar with mTOR these days, because it is the protein that is responsible for the increase in protein synthesis. And you can think of it as the anabolic hormone, anabolic protein, which is activated not just in muscle cells, but in other cells as well, when the body is constructing, so to say. And then there is AMP kinase, which is, it's not really the opposite, but it is a protein that is responsible for restoration, renovation, and also breakdown. But it's mainly responsible for the breakdown of debris that you do not really need anymore. And it has it is involved, and we are going to hear about that when we are talking about the supplements. It's directly involved in increases in glucose uptake, and it's also a very important target for the development of new anti-cancer drugs. So whenever you're fasting and you are switching into this mode where the AMP kinase level is rising, you have beneficial effects on your glucose metabolism, and when you're running on the glucose, so to say, that still start in your liver. You're actually not really using the glucose in your muscles unless you're working out. So while you're sleeping, you're mainly using fat as a substrate and some glucose from your liver. And depleting those glucose stores, or those glycogen stores, so to say, leaves or makes more room again on the next day or after the fast to actually store the glucose. And this will help you to keep insulin sensitive.
Interesting. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take our last commercial break. When we come back, we're going to go through a list of supplements that can also be of help to those who are searching for greater insulin sensitivity. You're listening to the Subversity Science Roundup with Adele Moussa, the brilliant and talented Adele Moussa, all the way from Munster, Germany. He delivers the information. Visit his website, subversity.com, SUPPVERSITY.com. We'll be right back.
It's interesting what we consider a reason to get angry.
He's a military strategist on health.
Merck, the pharmaceutical company, killed 55,000 people with Vioxx. They knew that it had a problem, and they sold it to people anyway, and 55,000 plus people died taking Vioxx.
He's Carl Lenore.
Why isn't this current administration going, we need to go to White House Station, New Jersey, where the Merck headquarters is, and send the military in there? We need to bomb Merck, because they killed 55,000 Americans knowing that they were going to kill 55,000 Americans.
On Superhuman Radio.
Where is the outrage about that?
Just like Carl Lenore, jumpstart your day with a liquid shot of high-dose vitamin C. Everyone is searching for that magic formula to look better and feel better. We don't claim to have a magic formula, but we do know that more than 1 million people take a shot of our high-dose vitamin C supplement every day. They're rewarding their body with an important nutrient and antioxidant that is sugar-free, gluten-free, and dairy-free. All of these benefits and no side effects. Unlike pills and powders, this high-tech bullet delivers vitamin C directly into your cells. Try Live-On Labs Vitamin C with a 100% money-back guarantee. Save $10 when you order now. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com or call 1-866-790-2107. That's 1-866-790-2107. And mention code SHRC to save $10 off each carton. Carl sees the benefits. So will you.
New from Rob Regish. Purchase the Blueprint 3.0 today and lock in your free 3-month subscription to the Blueprint Bulletin. Find out what many in the BP Army already know. This is the best investment they've ever made. Includes the free Superhuman University, Add 1 Inch to Your Upper Arms course, and 3 months of Blueprint Bulletin secrets to up your game. Click the Blueprint banner ad today or go to bodybuildingsupplements.com and purchase your ticket to Gainesville in the fast lane.
Get a free jug of BCAA Extended Performance. That's a $26 freebie when you buy Muscle Gauge Nutrition's Intense, the safest, most effective pre-workout alternative to DMAA. Intense is designed to quickly boost focused energy in a great-tasting formula free of aspartame or ACE-K. Only half the caffeine of top-selling concentrated pre-workout formulas on the market. Intense delivers unparalleled mental focus and energy to power your workouts. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Intense banner ad and use coupon code SUPER. That's SUPER.
If you're taking more than one nutritional supplement, stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food you can buy. Even Olympic athletes have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com. You take just one nutritional supplement to help the brain with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity. It is safe with no contraindications. Learn more at BioAge.com or call 877-288-9116. Mention Superhuman Radio and get a 10% discount. You can also go to SuperhumanRadio.com and click the BioAge banner ad. Enter promo code SHR for a discount.
Summer's almost here. Are you ready to put on your bathing suit and hit the beach? Age Force can help. Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch for 1 month absolutely free. The advanced 7 Keto and T2 formula with sustained time-release delivery make this the most potent and effective fat loss supplement, period. Try it for 30 days absolutely free and see for yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today. What do you have to lose other than body fat? Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch today. Absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad now.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where we use oxygen for the power of good.
Welcome back. Okay, so everybody loves supplements. People are probably thinking, well, what can I use? You know, I want a pill I can take that'll help me with this. There's a lot of things out there, that will work, and we're going to list some of the most popular ones here in a second. The one that I love the most, which was actually researched by the drug and chemical giant BASF back in the 70s and 80s as a potential anti-diabetes drug. But then they abandoned it when they couldn't patent it because it's naturally occurring, is alpha lipoic acid. What do you think about alpha lipoic acid, Adele?
Well, I just wanted to say something in advance, but it's actually directly related to alpha lipoic acid. Because these days, the supplement companies are trying to give you the idea that taking such insulin mimetics, as they often call them, will help you to keep lean, to lose body fat, to gain muscle, and all sorts of great things. But actually, there is no single study proving that. Most of them are their efficiency and their benefit actually rises with the degree of insulin resistance you display. Because if you have a certain baseline level of insulin sensitivity, and most of us who are working out regularly and are lean will have that, then trying to increase it even more is not really beneficial. I know that you had the author of this paper on your show who wrote about the natural bodybuilding competition preparation.
Right.
Lindy Rosso. I don't know if you remember that, but I had the chance to talk to her over the past couple of weeks several times via email, and she told me that one of the problems the subject in this particular study had was actually that he was oversensitive to insulin and it ended up being hypoglycemic. And I know from myself that I had hypoglycemic episodes when I played around with alpha lipoic acid, and I felt really bad because I had absolutely no energy, and it took me quite some time to figure out that this was actually the problem. So basically, what I'm saying is, when you are insulin sensitive, you don't really need all those supplements to improve your insulin sensitivity even more. In the worst case, you get low blood glucose levels, which is neither healthy nor will it help you lose weight or achieve any other beneficial effects. And what is particularly important to note is that many of those agents are not muscle-specific, which means they will increase the uptake of glucose in the whole body, including the fat.
And we see that with pharmaceutical insulin mimetics. We see that with these drugs, that people do not get leaner and leaner by taking them.
Of course not, no. Certainly they are not, no. Because the energy is stored away, and this is the main idea behind those pharmaceuticals, because they are designed for people who really suffer from the high blood glucose levels. But then, in that case, it's most important to store it or to get the glucose away. For somebody who is actually lean and trying to build muscle, the most important insulin or insulin sensitizer, so to say, is a workout, because this will be muscle-specific, while the other agents won't. And this is also true for alpha lipoic acid. It works via the same mechanism we've been talking about just before the break, which is AMP kinase. It increases the level and will increase the uptake of glucose. It is also all sorts of anti-inflammatory effects, and those are also related to the AMP kinase effect, but it's not really something a lean individual has to take to improve his already optimal insulin sensitivity. It is, on the other hand, one of the best agents for anyone who is overweight and insulin resistant, because it can really help you also in your weight loss efforts and to get the glucose levels in check in the beginning. It is not as potent as metformin, for example, which acts via the same mechanism, but it works pretty well. And back from the days when BASF was researching it, was, by the way, called teotic acid here in Germany, we have some good data that roughly 1 to 1.5 grams will actually work some magic in diabetic patients. Not as potent as metformin, as I said before, but really works in reducing the glucose levels.
But now, what about an athlete using these to manipulate nutrient partitioning or nutrient absorption post workout? Do you think? I mean, back in the day, the idea was 80 grams of dextrose, 40 grams of whey protein, 5 grams of creatine, and 200 milligrams of R-alpha lipoic acid, and that was supposed to get all that sugar, all that protein, and creatine shuttled into muscle faster. Were we wrong about that? Does nutrient timing change with these types of insulin mimetics if the muscles are hypersensitive after a workout?
There is some evidence that actually it increases that alpha lipoic acid can increase the uptake of creatine into the muscle, but the effect is very small. And if I recall correctly, that was not in the in the period after a workout. I would highly suspect that there is no measurable benefit from taking alpha lipoic acid or any other form of alpha lipoic acid after a workout if you are not insulin resistant and you worked out hard enough, so to say, to deplete your glycogen levels and thus increase the corresponding increase in NPKase. So I suppose that this is not really a necessary strategy, so to say.
Okay, now you've got a pretty long list here, right? Some of them, the research seems questionable. Like one that was very popular about 8 or 9 years ago was fucosanthin, but that was also seen, if I remember correctly, as a mitochondrial uncoupler, and that could lead to weight loss as a result of that. Am I confusing fucosanthin with something else?
No, actually, you're quite right, because if you look at the research that is out there, it is not really an agent that is mainly increasing your insulin sensitivity, but it is rather, as you said, it works a little bit like exercise in a pill, because it acts also via the so-called PGC1-alpha pathway. It directly increases the expression of GLUT4, of the glucose uptaker, on the surface of the cell. And in this way, it works it works similar to exercise, which does the same. The research, on the other hand, is not really extensive, and I'm not quite sure how reliable it actually is, because much is sponsored. And if you compare the results of the sponsored studies in humans to those in rodents, for example, I did try to find out what would be an appropriate dosage. And in the study, which was conducted with one of the formerly popular products, the amount of fucosanthin in this formulation was 1.5 or 3 grams, 3 milligrams. And if you go back to the rodent studies, it should rather be in the range of 15 to 16 milligrams per day. So I'm not really sure how reliable the science there is, and I'm also surprised that if it is as potent as those studies would suggest, because they really measured significant weight loss effects, why did it disappear from the scene? If something is that effective, it stays around.
This is a very, very long list, and I'm actually kind of getting ahead of myself. I'm just picking and choosing, but this list will be available in its totality in the Subversity Seconds, Science Roundup Seconds tomorrow, I'm sure. Okay, another one that's interesting to me is chromium. Chromium became popular for athletes. You have here that it increases insulin production. I remember reading research on chromium that showed that it affected glucose uptake into the cell through some other mechanism other than insulin. Has that been disproved now?
Actually, it's quite difficult to tell. The main effect appears to be by facilitating the production of insulin, and it's also part of the production cycle. On the other hand, it's also part of the reception of insulin on the side of the cell, so to say. If you're chromium deficient, you could say that your body cannot really realize that there's insulin floating around. On the other hand, it's quite interesting to see that there are studies in normal weight and not diabetic individuals with high dose of chromium of, I think, 800 micrograms per day, which showed that after a certain time point when the chromium built up in the body, they actually became more insulin resistant. So I really discouraged the old bodybuilding wisdom of taking some more is better than taking some a little too less. And in the case of chromium, it appears that it is really beneficial for diabetics because they appear to burn through their chromium faster. So there is a non-disclosed mechanism by which they use way more chromium than a normal person, but it is by no means a supplement that will help you lose fat or build muscle, and that is scientifically established that it does not work. Because when it was all the rage back in the days, so they did a couple of studies, and none of them showed that chromium can help you build muscle or lose fat.
Right, and another thing to be aware of is chromium accumulates in the body. So when you do take it, if it is something you need to take, you take it for a short period of time. You don't have to take it continuously and indefinitely either. Ginger, this one is exciting to me. But you have here that it works through the PPAR gamma inhibition pathway as well as an anti-inflammatory, which is a powerful analgesic, a powerful anti-inflammatory as well.
Yeah, it is. And actually, if you look at our people also look at the series, I tried to rate the supplements with A, B, C, and so. And actually, ginger got a B mainly because it is not really an insulin mimetic. The PPAR gamma pathway in this case is inhibited. If you look at some of the diabetes drugs, they actually increase the expression of PPAR gamma. The downside of that is that the result will be that your fat tissue will take up the glucose and store it in the form of fat, so to say.
Right.
And this is one of the reasons why some of the they are not so popular these days, but some of the older diabetes drugs really made people only fatter and fatter, and this will in the end come to haunt you. In the case of ginger, the immediate beneficial effects on glucose metabolism are probably related to its potent anti-inflammatory effect. And this is actually one of the compounds that could also be very interesting for people who are trying to stay lean because of the inhibition of PPAR gamma, which will decrease the deposition of body fat in the fat cells. So on the one hand, it will help you to control inflammation, and on the other hand, it will also reduce the deposition of body fat. And when you're dieting, it's obviously also helping, especially those who are really obese and have to calm down the inflammation before the first pounds are going to fall down, so to speak.
I wonder if white willow bark would work as well, because white willow bark works in similar pathways as ginger. I'm being told we have to take a break. We've gone very long, and we have some more supplements we want to cover. So just sit tight for a couple more minutes. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to jump right on berberine because it's all the rage right now. You're listening to Subversity Science Roundup with Adel Moussa. We'll be right back.
He's keeping tabs on government health agencies.
It's called the Environmental Protection Agency.
Carl Lenore.
Where is the protection? Where is the protection?
Superhuman Radio.
If you're taking more than one nutritional supplement, stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food you can buy. Even Olympic athletes have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com. You take just one nutritional supplement to help the brain with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity. It is safe with no contraindications. Learn more at BioAge.com or call 877-288-9116. Mention Superhuman Radio and get a 10% discount. You can also go to SuperhumanRadio.com and click the BioAge banner ad. Enter promo code SHR for a discount.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, GetDS.com or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
You already know that Whey Natural USA is the best whey protein powder from Amish grass pasture fed cows right here in the United States. Well, it's their second anniversary bonanza sale. Now you can get any number of 5-pound jugs of vanilla, chocolate, strawberry, or plain and save 20% when you use the coupon code ANNIV20. There's never anything artificial in Whey Natural USA. Sweetened with stevia and real cocoa, strawberry, or vanilla bean. It's the best, period. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Whey Natural USA banner ad today.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Get a free jug of BCAA Extended Performance. That's a $26 freebie when you buy Muscle Gauge Nutrition's Intense, the safest, most effective pre-workout alternative to DMAA. Intense is designed to quickly boost focused energy in a great-tasting formula free of aspartame or ACE-K. Only half the caffeine of top-selling concentrated pre-workout formulas on the market. Intense delivers unparalleled mental focus and energy to power your workouts. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Intense banner ad and use coupon code SUPER. That's S-U-P-E-R.
Summer's almost here. Are you ready to put on your bathing suit and hit the beach? Age Force can help. Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch for 1 month absolutely free. The advanced 7 keto and T2 formula with sustained time release delivery make this the most potent and effective fat loss supplement, period. Try it for 30 days absolutely free and see for yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today. What do you have to lose other than body fat? Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch today. Absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad now.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio. Ladies and gentlemen,
it's the one and only
dysfunctional DJ.
Stranded at the drive.
It's the one and only D-O-double-G, Snoop Dogg. Okay, so I love berberine. I'm hearing so many things about it. From both the fitness community as well as doctors who are trying to find ways to help their patients overcome diabetes. So what's the scoop on berberine? Does it really work, and if so, how?
Well, berberine is actually probably the most exciting agent in the whole list. This is because it acts via both the previously mentioned pathways. It does actually directly increase the expression of AMPK-mase, and it is an inhibitor of PPARA-gamma. So on the one hand, it will increase the glucose uptake and also the fatty acid oxidation by working on the AMPK-mase pathway, which is also related to the anti-cancer effects and its anti-inflammatory effects. And on the other hand, it's going to prevent you from putting the pounds back on, so to say, by inhibiting the PPAR gamma pathway, which is, by the way, the main working principle of another fat loss drug, so to say, which is CLA. Most people will be familiar, but especially in rodent studies, this is it gets the rodents really ridiculously lean. In human beings, it did not work out that well, but the basic mechanism is the same. It really stops the deposition of body fat in the fat stores, so to say. And if you look at the whole research that is out there, there are really so numerous benefits from berberine that if all those will be proven in future human trials, some of them have only been observed in rodents yet, while others are only speculated about based on studies in the petri dish, especially when it comes to cancer and other things you usually first study in the dish. We don't have the corresponding human data, and we don't have any real information on long-term safety. So these are the only downsides I could really think about, because otherwise it appears as if it could actually replace many of the weaker diabetes drugs, including metformin, if it's dosed in the right at the right amount, and also combined, of course, with lifestyle interventions.
Let's see here. You've got a lot of good ones on here. I'm just trying to find some that would be interesting. Obviously, vinegar, a lot of people know about this, but vinegar and lemon juice, acetic acid, has been shown to reduce the glycemic index by slowing glucose absorption. And that's an easy one for people to take. What about cinnamon? Cinnamon, does it actually do the same thing as the acetic acid and the vinegar, or does it work some other way?
That's not quite sure. It appears that one of the main effects actually is similar, so that it reduces the influx of glucose, or the speed at which your blood glucose levels rise, and will thus help you to manage the glucose levels. There is some evidence that certain compounds in cinnamon, when they are dosed in relatively high amounts, will have a direct effect on the glucose uptake on the cellular level. But if you look at the few longer term studies, there is actually no benefit from long term benefits from using cinnamon in diabetics. They get the benefit when they eat the meal acutely, but if you look at the long-term measure of blood glucose management, the so-called HbA1c, which measures the amount of glucose that has been accumulating on the red blood cells, there is no benefit from using cinnamon supplements or from using larger amounts of cinnamon with your foods. So this is not the panacea it is supposed to be, or many people make it actually. And it's also another one I would actually like to mention is GABA. And
I was going to say that one, because that's one that I looked at and I thought, okay, I've heard of a lot of things that have an effect on both glucose disposal and glucose uptake, but I've never heard GABA ever even in that discussion. And you have it on the list here with a question mark.
Yeah, the question mark indicates that it's difficult to judge whether it's going to be the anti-diabetes agent of the future or if it's just an outlier that has been observed in a couple of studies. But what we know already is that larger amounts of GABA can actually induce a pretty profound insulin release from the pancreas, irrespective of whether you consume foods with it or not. And this was actually part of the first evidence that there is a direct interaction between GABA and the cells in the pancreas, which is the organ which produces insulin. And there is first evidence from rodent studies, actually, that the chronic supplementation of GABA to rodents with defect cells in the pancreas can restore a normal insulin response in animals that are really diabetic, not just insulin resistant, so to say. Because the main difference, actually, between insulin resistance and so-called diabetes is that somebody who's insulin resistant will have very high insulin levels but cannot take up the glucose. Somebody who's really diabetic in the end stage will have impaired function of his pancreas and will not even produce enough glucose to do anything. Very much similar to someone who has a type 1 diabetes, where the body is attacking the pancreatic cells and destroying it, which is... many people don't know this, but type 1 diabetes is also one of those many autoimmune diseases,
right,
which are really on the rise in the last years. And if these early studies actually are supported by follow-up studies, it could be that GABA could be an agent that actually reverses full-blown diabetes, because all we've been talking about before only works to a certain degree. Once it's too late, once the organ damage has occurred, none of these agents will really help you, and you will in the end actually need to inject insulin because your body cannot produce it any longer.
Okay, so should somebody use GABA the way it has been used in the past to elicit a growth hormone response as well, and that is right before bedtime? Will that help the pancreas and the ensuing day's insulin production?
I'm not quite sure. I personally, I don't know if somebody already tried to take 5 grams of GABA, which is...
I have. I've taken 5 grams of GABA for over 2 years, back in 2002, 2003, 2004, and I take 3 grams of GABA every night now.
Yeah, you don't have the breathing problems and the knees not being able to support your body.
Well, when taking doses of GABA at 3 grams or above, you get some nasty momentary side effects. You get this sensation that you have to catch your breath, like you can't breathe deep enough, and also you'll get paresthesia in your hands and feet, tingling like your feet are falling asleep and your hands are falling asleep.
I know that many people recommend that for growth hormone release, but if you think about the effects of insulin, I'm not quite.
I was just going to say. I was just going to say. Now that you say that. To me, it's hypoglycemia. It probably elicits a momentary drop in blood sugar that causes the body to panic, and paresthesia is one of the side effects or symptoms of hypoglycemia.
Exactly, and you know what one of the reactions to hypoglycemia is? The release of growth hormone.
Right.
You can test the growth hormone response in children, for example. It's often tested by inducing temporary hypoglycemia and seeing whether the body reacts appropriately with the release of growth hormone. And I'm not quite sure if this is the most beneficial way to elicit growth hormone response, especially because there's no scientific evidence that this would have any beneficial effect on either body composition or muscle gains. This is just one of those things that appear logical from one perspective, but only if you don't have the full picture, and if you're just thinking about, well, growth hormones was one of the things on the good side of the bodybuilding lexicon, so to say. So we want to promote that. But if you don't really know what growth hormone does in your body, because it's not just a hormone that makes your body, it makes anything grow or so. It's also very important in the management of blood glucose. It's, so to say, the anabolic counterpart to cortisol, because it will also make energy available. And this is also part of its fat-burning or mythical fat-burning effects. It's actually that growth hormone is released when you actually need the fat in order to fuel your energetic demands.
Interesting. There's one other thing that I want to talk about real quick that's not on your list. I'm quite often I'm opposed to pharmaceuticals to correct type 2 diabetes because I feel like using supplements and lifestyle changes will do everything you need it to do. But there is one. It goes by the brand name of Cyclocet. It's a fast-releasing bromocriptine. Bromocriptine was used in the past to elicit a dopaminergic response in the brain. It also has been used by some, I want to say, to control prolactin production. But bromocriptine, I think it's pronounced misolate or misolate, which is Cyclocet, is a fast-acting, fast-releasing bromocriptine. You take it first thing in the morning, and what it's designed to do is it plays a role in possibly the reciprocal of a bad night's sleep by resetting the body, if you will, the body's clock, and normalizing insulin production first thing in the morning. You take it first thing in the morning when you wake up, you throw it in your mouth as you're getting out of bed, you swallow it, and it kind of wakes you up a little bit. I've experimented with it. I've played with it just to see what it's like. I know I'm an idiot. But one of the things that it does do, instead of trying to mask a biological derangement by covering it up, it tries to correct it. And that is something that I would say if you do want to turn to a doctor, if you're struggling with insulin resistance and type 2 diabetes right now and you want something that may have some beneficial effects that is more pharmaceutically prepared, Cyclocet, which is a fast-acting bromocriptine. From what I hear about it, you don't have to take it for very long. You take it for a couple months, and that's it. And it's supposed to reestablish the synchronicity of insulin production. Have you heard about that, Adele, at all?
No, I have not. But interestingly, I've written about bromocriptine in a related context when I looked at all agents that actually inhibit PPAR gamma. So if it promotes, if it works like bromocriptine, or if it's a short-acting version of bromocriptine, it will also work on this pathway, which is supposed to reduce the storage of body fat, so to say.
Oh, so maybe I should take it for that reason. I have a couple bottles of it at home. Maybe I should start taking it to reduce my body fat.
Yeah, I guess, but if it's short-acting, this will not really help you because you would have to have some sort of long-acting version. But getting back to reestablishing the rhythm, I did not really mention that before, but when it comes to sleep hygiene, it can be very beneficial to help yourself to get into the groove, and especially if you have to work shifts, to get into the groove faster by using doses of 3 to 10 milligrams of melatonin. And this is actually something by which you can set your biological clock. And as much as you can do this by fasting, by eating at certain time points, and especially not eating late at night, because this is a signal that tells your that will offset your peripheral clock, which is the clock that regulates your metabolic functions, from your central clock, which is the one you could betray by using those glasses, those blue glasses.
Yes.
And
yes.
Whenever these are not in sync, you are ending up with large problems.
I think this show has covered a lot of really important stuff today, and I think it's a great show to bring back. The Subversity Science Roundup series here, and we won't be on the air next week, but the week after we will. Great work today, Adele. Great work. And by the way, I can't wait for you to send out this issue of the Subversity Seconds. Are you going to use this exact document that you sent to me?
I'm probably putting it together in two parts, so to say. For tomorrow, I plan to publish the part on cancer. It will probably look much like what I sent you, only in HTML format, of course. And I'm planning to expand on the list I already have here by suggesting a couple of texts for different situations or people in different life situations, so to say. And the actual list of lifestyle modifications is already available on the webpage.
Well, this is a great Subversity Science Roundup Seconds. If you get it looking like this, it looks like any top-end magazine. Adele, great work today.
Thanks.
Thank you.
By the way, since your interview with the Paleo magazine, I would suggest everybody read it because Carl explains that Paleo was not invented 10 years ago by whoever used the word first, but that much of what is today known as a paleolithic diet, or many of the most important principles, have been around all along and been part of physical culture for almost a decade or even more.
Yeah, now for a very, very long time. Thank you very much for that, Adele. Thank you. Okay, and then tomorrow is Friday. I'll be joined by the lovely and talented Elisa Profumo. The brilliant and talented Adele Musa will be displaced, and we'll be here with the lovely and talented Elisa Profumo talking about the Olympia. So tune in tomorrow for that. Thank you, Adele.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet.